Dan, it's something we don't see very often. Obviously, the best start in NBA history. And I don't know, there's no reason to think that that Charlotte's going to slow them down and they're not going to go 20 to start the year tomorrow night.
No, there really is no reason to think otherwise. This team, this Warriors team, has sort of dispelled every possible negative notion that's out there. They've dealt with some injuries in Andrew Bogut and now it's Harrison Barnes, yet they were still able to overcome that game against the Jazz last night, which by their standards was ugly winning. So that's encouraging. You know they're going to slip up eventually, and maybe it will be on this lengthy road trip, but they're just playing on another plane right now. And you look specifically to Stephen Curry, who seems like he can hit any given shot at any given moment whenever he wants. And then Draymond Green, who is just the most complete player on this team. And it's tough to imagine them not challenging those 95-96 Bulls for that 72-win record, just because they are so complete from top to bottom. And as we saw last night, even when they're not at their best, they're a scary unit.
And that's kind of the, you know, the unique part about this team, that even when they're not at their best, they still find ways to win. Obviously, some games closer than other. Last one, 106-103, their tightest game of the year against Utah. And after Charlotte, they go into Toronto, where the Raptors gave them a heck of a run in Golden State. And I know Raptor fans would claim that if it wasn't for two horrible calls late in that game, maybe it's a different outcome. But if a team is going to beat or even slow down Golden State, how do you think they go about it?
I think you, at this point, have to follow the model that the Jazz almost used. They really just crashed the boards hard. They were able to defend them particularly well, chase them off the three-point line when they could, even though the Warriors wound up still getting hot from long distance. But you need to complement that defensive dynamic with a coherent offense, and that was really what did the Jazz in last night. Is down the stretch when they needed some big shots, they couldn't get them, and you had the Warriors hitting big shots. So if you're able to defend them like the Jazz are, that puts you in good shape. It allows you to dictate the pace. But if you sort of can't score in the half court when you are dictating that pace, that is really going to hurt you. The other thing that you can try, but no other team really seems to be built to do it, is just replicating Golden State's model. If they're going to go super small, you go super small and maybe throw someone out who would normally play small forward or power forward and toss them out at center when Draymond Green is playing center. Those are really the only two ways I can think of right now, but they're both imperfect just because the Warriors can beat you in both those ways as well. And that truly is the problem in looking at how are you going to beat this team on a night-to-night basis.
Dan, the Warriors are doing this without their head coach, Steve Kerr. He had back surgery in the offseason. Does Luke Walton now become the best NBA coach that's not a head coach? Is he in line for some of the jobs that should be opening up soon?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like the Lakers are going to throw him some great money this offseason. That's just the way it seems headed. It's definitely a testament to what he might be able to do as a head coach, but I more look at it as sort of a compliment to Steve Kerr, that he was able to install a system and a culture that transcends his availability, because he's not on the sidelines during games. He's not at every practice. And yet this team is still intact. And we have to remember that when Kerr took over, he didn't really make any wholesale changes to the roster. He turned a good Warriors team into a great team, and now, as we can see, into a team that can last beyond him. So you have to give him all the credit in the world. But yes, it's good for Luke Walton that he was really able to keep the ship steady, and you see that this team was able to remain hot, stay on track, and that'll certainly help him this summer, where you have to imagine he's going to be fielding multiple offers from whatever jobs open up.
We're joined by Dan Vivoli from Bleacher Report talking NBA. You mentioned the Lakers. You think they might throw some money at Luke Walton. They have an interesting season still to play out. Kobe Bryant announced his retirement. They're 2-14. Laker fans aren't used to this type of season. So what do you expect to play out over the last three quarters of the season? There'll be a farewell for Kobe, but he's still playing on a really bad basketball team right now.
Yeah, I don't think you can expect anything different than what we've already seen. If anything, it might make it a little bit more easier to stomach, just because you know this is Kobe's swan song, so maybe you cherish him caroming all these shots off the rim for the rest of the year. But for the Lakers, what this really has to be about, in addition to giving Kobe a send-off, is is seeing what you have in Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell. Both those guys need to play more, specifically Russell, and get more looks. You have to see if they can coexist alongside one another because Clarkson is going to be a restricted free agent this summer. You want to see what you have in Julius Randle so you can kind of understand what you need to address over the offseason. And then the other thing just to keep in mind is that the Lakers don't necessarily, aside from making sure that Russell and Clarkson are more prominent parts of the offense, need to do anything different because with the rate that they're losing now, there's a strong chance that they can keep their top three protected draft pick that's owed to Philadelphia. And that will be huge for them moving forward into the post-Kobe era if they're able to retain that because all of a sudden you're looking at four guys in Randle, probably Clarkson, Russell, and that top three pick that not only can you build around, but you can point to free agents and say, hey, we have this in place, and that should help make the transition even easier. So the rest of this year is about the future and just saying goodbye to Kobe. And I think while it's tough to watch the Lakers right now and while it's tough to see Kobe miss all these shots, we have to remember that this could end up helping them in the long run.
I got one just to go back to the Warriors for just 1 second. Do you think there is a chance that they can beat the 95-96 Bulls and their record?
I don't even think we're at the point where we have to wonder, is there a chance? It just seems like it's going to happen at this point. Barring anything that really takes Draymond Green or Stephen Curry out of the game, this team has showed that it can overcome so much. I mean, you look at what they do without Harrison Barnes on the floor, and statistically, they're still the league's best team. So it's really tough to just imagine them slipping to the point where, hey, over these last 60-plus games, are they going to lose 10 times? I just don't see it. They are head and shoulders better than everyone else in the league right now. And just to repeat myself, unless there's a catastrophic injury or anything of that ilk, this team looks primed to win more than 72 games.
The crazy part about 72 games is Golden State would need to go basically 54-9 the rest of the way to beat it. Like, it's such a daunting task. I know the players probably wouldn't look at it that way, but it's mind-blowing when you break it down. They're 19-0. They still need to go 54-9 to break the record.
Oh, absolutely. But I do think one way to also look at it is you can kind of say, even though this isn't exact math, hey, they're allowed to lose one game every 10 games. And they've already made it through almost the first 20 without losing. So it almost makes it easier for them to look at if you're going to break these games down into blocks just because they have come so far. And if you get to 20-0, it gives you a little bit more leeway if you look at it in that mindset. The other thing with this team is that they're very aware of the history that they're chasing, and they want it. If it wasn't starting 16-0, now they're looking toward that 33-game win streak. And if they get there, or even once that chase concludes, even if it's unsuccessful, you have to imagine they'll sort of shift their focus to matching that 72-win mark. So the fact that they're gunning for it is really just big, because we saw the Warriors rest players down the stretch last year and also in fourth quarters. But if you're going to throw these guys out for most of the game and just play with your best talent, again, it's a daunting task. But when you look at this team, you sort of wonder, hey, how are they not going to do it?
Dan, it's going to be a storyline that everybody follows all year long, and likely a better one than Kobe Bryant's retirement, because honestly, that's not worth following until maybe the final one or two games. I can't stand players announcing, you know, 4 months before they're retiring so everybody can watch them in a flood, because they're not the players they were. And I just don't think any player needs a season-long farewell tour. I've never liked it for any of the players that have done it. And, you know, Kobe Bryant, I just add to the list because he's not, you know, good for him. He's taking all the focus off his play and having it on his retirement. But the fact is he's just, you know, he's done. It's a smart decision to retire, but he should have waited till the last two or three games to announce it.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you, but you sort of touched upon it, is that the Lakers were so bad and his play was so bad and he's dealing with these injuries, and you're wondering why Byron Scott was playing him so much and why he wasn't resting more, you almost needed the explanation. We all kind of thought that this was going to be his last year anyway, and him making it official doesn't really change things. And I don't think if he could have played even a little bit better that he would have made this announcement, but it got to the point where it was so bad, so tough to watch, so hard to understand what was going on in Los Angeles that he sort of needed to give that explanation. And whether the farewell tour becomes too much or not, it just got to that point in Los Angeles is what it seems.
Dan, appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Most definitely. Thank you guys for having me. Take care.